Hey there, it's Jill Schlesinger. I'm launching a brand new show. It's called Money Moves. Follow and listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Shaletta had the day off. We had a Twins matinee. Same deal tomorrow, an early start. Corzo at 10. He's done at 10:30. Inside Twins starts then. Lineup card at 11 a.m. First pitch at 11:45. Twins and Blue Jays close out the four-game series at Target Field. And it should be sunny, but it's clouded up. As you heard a moment ago with Al, I'm keeping an eye on the radar for you. And we got a little rain moving down I-94 from Alexandria toward the cities. No storms, but a little light rain potentially in our future this evening. And as a matter of fact, there is a chance of showers, mainly before 11. And then Sunday, sunny and lovely, 67. And then it looks like, as you heard a moment ago from Al, relatively cool week. Couple of headlines. Blue Jays score 8 in the 8th. And pound the Twins today. Not a good look for the bullpen today. 11-4, the final. The Blue Jays have won 2 in a row, and they're within a game of 500 after a slow start. The Twins have fallen to 14-20, and since the middle of April, they have dropped 14 of 17 games. So, tough stretch for the Twins as they have fallen to 14-20 on the campaign. Couple other headlines. Cameron Young, your leader, late in the third round of the Cadillac Championship in Miami. Scottie Scheffler is done at 9 under par. Siwoo Kim still on the course. He's at minus 9. But once again, it's Cameron Young by 6. At the end, or very near the end of the third round of the Cadillac Championship in Miami on the PGA Tour. And now we're going to talk Wild hockey. They're getting ready to take on the Avalanche, round two of the NHL Stanley Cup playoffs. And we haven't been able to say Wild in round two in 11 years. And Jez Myers joins us from the Pioneer Press. Jez, good to visit with you. I was off a week ago, and all of that, the Wild have taken care of business and beat the Dallas Stars in the first round.
As God intended, right? Isn't it about time? It was fun talking to Marcus Foligno today because, he had a great line. He said, right now we'd normally be planning the year-end team party. And he said, I got pretty sick of those. So he said, this is like Christmas morning right now. The fact that they're moving on. They're on their way to Colorado right now. I'm going to be on a plane to Denver here in a couple hours. So this is just fun. Now, with all of that said, I talked to Nico Sturm, who has been a part of two Stanley Cup runs, one in Colorado, one in Florida last year. And he said, I don't know of anybody in the summer who says, my goal was to get to the second round of the playoffs. There's a sense that this is a huge accomplishment, but they're just getting started, too.
Yeah, and that is a great point, Jez, because sports is really year to year because the group changes, whatever the level, whether it's youth sports, high school sports, college sports, or at the highest level in the pros, the group is different, and a lot of these guys had nothing to do with those other first-round failures, and you start from the young goaltender. You look at a guy like Quinn Hughes. They weren't around for any of that stuff.
Jesper Wallstedt and Brock Faber were both 12 years old the last time the Wild went to the second round.
Obviously
they didn't have anything to do with it. You talk about all this pain of the franchise. Well, Vladimir Tarasenko was here the last time the Wild got to the second round. He was playing for the other team. He was on the ice for St. Louis that day. We kind of asked him about that, and he said, feels a lot better to be on this side. He remembered that series 11 years ago. But you're absolutely right. This is the history of the franchise, but for these players, for most of them, there's absolutely no connection to it. I will say this, though, Steve. I went to Tom Reed's after the game on Thursday night, and while I was there talking to Tom and some of the other folks that I know from around the Wild, Craig Leopold and his kind of entourage came in, and man, you talk about a happy group and a relieved group, because they've known for some time this was really, really an important step for this franchise after a long time, for this fan base, to give them something, you know, to give us hockey on Mother's Day weekend is pretty cool.
Well, and there is no doubt, we talked about it often during the regular season, that Craig Leopold and his general manager, Bill Guerin, organizationally, they push their chips into the middle of the table. The Quinn Hughes deal is a great example of that. They gave up a lot of prospects, and, you know, it was kind of like, hey, they had finally locked in Kirill Kaprizov. Matt Boldy continues to emerge as a superstar in this league. You know, the ingredients are there, and they really went all in.
Yeah, and you know, Bill Guerin realized you weren't gonna eclipse the Dallases of the world or the Colorados of the world by sitting on what you had. You know, he had a good team. He wanted to put together a great team. That was one of the reasons for the Quinn Hughes move. You know, now we're already talking about, will they re-sign Quinn Hughes? But, you know, in the immediate future, with the series versus Colorado starting tomorrow night. And by the way, the NHL didn't do many favors by starting on Sunday night as opposed to Monday night. You know, you thought maybe they would get that extra day of rest. And that manifests itself this way. Jonas Brodin is not going to travel to Colorado. He will not be available for game one for sure, probably for game two either. And then now there's a question about Joel Eriksson Ek. You know, he had that weird injury where he just kind of went down on his own, you know, slammed into the boards. In the third period of that game against Dallas, managed to play the rest of the third period, kind of toughed it out, but he's questionable for game one as well. So, you know, they're up against it against a very good Colorado team. But, hey, as some guys said, this is just gravy that they're playing in the second round. They got to this point, and they're really excited. And this is a confident group, too.
Yeah, and a little bit more about Hughes. How about his performance in the first round of the playoffs and, you know, what he means to this team? And maybe Wild fans, they had heard about him or maybe saw him here and there. But getting to see this guy game in, game out, it's like, wow.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and he talked about it a little bit after the game that, you know, he, Matt Boldy, Brock Faber for sure, the guys who went through that Olympic experience a couple months ago, you know, that was a good prep for the intensity and the pressure and all of that that comes along with the NHL playoffs, being in elimination games, being, you know, with a group of guys that you're ride or die with, that kind of thing. So that experience in hand, you know, the fact that he got two goals in that game, first two-goal game of his playoff career. In fact, he had two career playoff goals coming into that game. Interestingly enough, his first ever playoff goal was scored against the Minnesota Wild back in, I think it was 2020 or 2021, that weird kind of playoff tournament they had starting in August because of COVID and you know, the different way they had to do things back then.
Yeah. They were the better team versus the Stars. I think over that series, it was kind of like, okay, Dallas, you know, racked up more points during the regular season. I like this Wild club better.
Yeah, and a couple things they did really well. Number one, they absolutely shut down Dallas 5-on-5. You know, the Stars got just a couple of 5-on-5 goals. And the other thing that John Hines has preached, and you really saw it as this series went on, you know, that first game, they won 6-1 in Dallas's building. And, you know, you think, man, that's about as good as it can get. And the immediate thing that John Hines said after that game was, we need to be better next game, and we need to be better than that the game after that. Like, we need to improve every game of this series. And for the most part, they did. I mean, you could say they maybe took a little bit of a step backwards in game two, but they got better and better, you know, shut down Dallas 5-on-5. Their power play struggled. Their penalty kill struggled. And those are the things they're going to have to focus on here in round two, and John Hines talked about that today. But the other thing I will say is that the Wild hit everything that moved. And you could see at some point in game six, Dallas just said, okay, enough. You know, we've got a deficit here. We're getting beat up. We're done. You know, if you can force another team to kind of get away from what they are and who they are by just putting that kind of physical pressure on them, that's a huge, huge benefit.
And Jed Swires joining us, covers Wild for the Pioneer Press. John Schuster, Coldwell Banker Hotline. Goes without saying, huge challenge, Colorado Avalanche. I think you can kind of throw out what happened during the regular season, but this is a talented club and goes without saying, a gigantic challenge for the Wild.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, they're just so deep. And, you know, it starts with Nathan MacKinnon, who's the best goal scorer in the league. And, you know, he was my vote for MVP. I don't know if he's going to win it. But, man, this is a really, really deep, really talented team. They've got their own version of Quinn Hughes on the blue line in Cale Makar. You know, just one of those puck-moving, control-the-game kind of defensemen. And Colorado's a tough place to play. It's an intimidating atmosphere. It's a good sports town. They love the Avalanche. You know, they turn out in big numbers. They're loud. If you've been to a Minnesota Vikings game, the stadium announcer for the Avalanche is the same guy that we've got here in Minnesota, Alan Roach. So a familiar voice. You know, he gets the crowd pumped up there. So, yeah. And you talk about another part of this, some fun history between these two teams in the playoffs. You know, the first ever Wild playoff series was against Colorado. They wound up, you know, down 3-1. Then they come back and win the series, game 6 and game 7 in overtime. And then, you know, the one time the Wild have won their division back in 2008, Colorado came in here first round and upset Minnesota that year. And then we had another great series in 2014 that the Wild won in 7 games with another game 7 overtime win. So, you know, kind of a fun history, kind of a fun rivalry between these two teams.
Yeah, it is amazing. You had the Timberwolves Nuggets and some bad blood, and get ready for that all over again when this series gets started. And once again, it'll get started on Sunday night, and then all the other times to be announced, they're still sorting that out.
We don't know if game 2, you know, you would think it would go Sunday, then a day off and play Tuesday, but we just don't know that yet. They could actually do it 2 games off. And at this point, when you've got a guy like Erickson Ek, where he's questionable, you want all the rest you can get. So it'll be very interesting to see how they handle that. One thing John Hines did say today is they do have some depth at center if Joel Erickson Ek isn't available. And that would be a huge loss, make no mistake. But they have a lot of guys that can take faceoffs. They've got some options there. So it will be interesting to see what the line chart looks like if Joel Erickson Ek isn't on it for game 1.
You know, and there's a couple of things, Jazz, before we let you go. Fans and all need to keep in perspective. The Wild have won 25% of the games needed to put their name on the cup. That's how early it is still.
Yes.
And to think of it in those terms is mind-boggling.
Yeah, it's it really does become survival of the fittest the longer you go in the playoffs. You get to, you know, it was funny. I had a conversation with Kirill Kaprizov, just kind of off the cuff, just, you know, shooting the breeze in the locker room. And I said, "How you doing?" He said, "I'm doing good." He said, he asked how I was doing. And I said, "I'll be honest, you know, you get to this point in the playoffs, you get a little tired, you know, a lot of travel and all that." And he looked at me and he said, "You're tired?"
Maybe
I should just be quiet because I'm not the one getting beat up for, you know, for 20 minutes a game and all that. Yeah.
Pretty good stuff. Finally, on the young goaltender. We touched on a little bit, but I don't know if roll of the dice is the right term, but John Hines, Bill Guerin, and company decided to go with Jesper Wallstad in that. So far, is so good.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think anybody's questioning that decision with the way he has played. Calm, poise, little bit of a swagger to him maybe. And keep in mind, you had that bad blood earlier in the year between the Colorado radio announcer and Wallstad. You know, he drew some criticism for the way he celebrates after games, and they kind of went back and forth with him saying, "Hey, it's supposed to be fun. I'm gonna go out there and have fun." So that just adds to the fun of this series, I think.
Yeah, and by the way, following Timberwolves Nuggets, I've had it with some of the Denver media personalities. Give me a break.
Yeah, I wanted to thank the Wolves, by the way, for getting the Nuggets out of the way, because that way the Avalanche don't have to share an arena for the next round, and I don't have to worry about like going off to the suburbs to watch practice. They'll just have everything at Ball Arena, and that'll be great.
And making it easier for the media is the key.
That's right. Keep the talent happy, I like to say.
Yeah, Jess, always great. Thanks for the time. Safe travels to Denver.
Thanks, Steve. Talk to you soon.
All right, there he is, Jess Myers of the Pioneer Press, joining us on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. Another big day. The two-time defending PWHL champions, the Minnesota Frost, they go on the road. They win game 1 in Montreal in OT. Heather Rule joins in a moment here on News Talk 830 WCCO.
Hey, this is Richard Deitch, the host of the Sports Media Podcast. If you're interested in what's happening with all the places where you consume sports, the Sports Media Podcast has you covered.
I've been turning down interviews all week. Hoda Kotb reached out, Oprah, George Stephanopoulos. So I said no. I was booked on the Deitch Podcast before the Taylor Swift phenomenon. I must live up to my responsibility.
Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Steve Thompson with Lindsey Brown on a Saturday. Twins bullpen implodes today, and the Blue Jays roar to the victory 11-4. Eight runs in the eighth. It was ugly. Final game of the four-game series tomorrow. First pitch, 11:45 a.m. Should be a lovely day as the Twins try and salvage a split there. The Frost opened the PWHL playoffs on the road in Montreal. Montreal wanted to play the Frost, the two-time defending champs, and lo and behold, Minnesota wins it in OT. Heather Rule joins us, local sports journalist. Heather, what a win for the two-time defending champs.
Hey, Steve. Yeah, it was a very, very exciting just kind of playoff hockey game. You know, it had a little bit of everything, goal scoring, some quick responses with the goal scoring, tie game. Special teams is a huge factor. You had a lot of physicality, some scrums after the whistles. So, yeah, it was exciting. And, you know, you had overtime into, you know, double overtime or quadruple overtime or anything like that. Got it done in the first 5 minutes, and the Frost got the victory. So that's good to see for Minnesota.
Yeah, and as Lindsey brought up earlier in the show, a major penalty, check to the head, certainly a big moment in the game as well. But the Frost find a way. This year they got into the playoffs comfortably. I just can't imagine two-time defending champs with the skill on this roster and the goaltending tandem that teams are at all thrilled. I still feel like as good as Montreal and Boston were during the regular season, I still put my money on the Frost.
Yeah, you know, the thing is, the way the Frost did it the first 2 years, nothing is going to surprise me. I feel like the way they did it, coming as the fourth seed, and the first two playoff games 2 years ago, they were shut out. And they were down 2-0, and it looked completely over, and they came back and won that series, and then they won it all. So, you know, I just don't think anything, like, they could be dead. They could have lost today. It would have been expected. This is the first game one they had ever won. They had always come in and dropped the first game. So the first time they have a 1-0 series lead, which is exciting for them. And looking at the score sheet, they kind of have done it like they've, you know, done it a lot this season with five different scores. I think nine players got on the score sheet. So they did it that way. They got one in the power play. They had a shorthanded goal. And, you know, Montreal, I mean, they, you know, you get a hat trick from a player and aren't able to win the game, which has got to be really disappointing and frustrating for them. And for the Frost, I think, I was just telling Lindsay, you know, you score four goals against this goaltender for Montreal, you better find a way to win that game. It was the first, I think she'd only given up two or fewer goals in regulation in the regular season this year. She'd never given up more than that. And they put four up on her, you know, 2-0 lead in the first period. And Montreal, to their credit, you know, tied the game up, I think, three different times. And there were, you know, I think each team had a quick answer with, you know, less than a minute later, you know, either taking the lead or tying it back up. So it's just a lot going on today. And I know you mentioned the penalty to Britta Kreel-Salome for a check to the head. And I would suspect there could be probably a suspension coming on that. She has been suspended in the past. So that is going to be a big loss for them. She led the league in assists this year. So that'll be tough. She is, you know, she is a physical player and, you know, has had that happen before. So that'll be tough. But again, you know, the Frost also, they have other players in more scoring depth. So they found a way to win without her for the third period of that game as well.
Game two, Tuesday night, Montreal, Thursday night, the stage is set. If the Frost can find a way Tuesday night for them to sweep the series at home on Thursday night, I'll be in the building with my family. and Lindsay's going to be there. Lindsay, when you show up, they win big games.
Thursday is tentative, I will say, depending on – we still don't have the Wild schedule yet for the rest of their series. So I think there is potential that that Frost game could get moved. There's nothing for sure on that yet. But I know when they did release that, they said it's kind of pending the NHL schedule. So, yes, we will have game three here. We're just – I'm not entirely sure when it will happen. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, it would be really exciting for them to – have a chance to sweep at home would be really exciting.
Well, and Lindsay, you've been there for big moments, so the stage is set, whether it's Thursday night or Friday night or whatever.
We're going to have to stay in Heather's closet that she has in the rink there just to, like, wait it out. I don't want to miss a second of it.
I'll have to find some more cots or something that I definitely should have there.
It's a Murphy bed somewhere.
Yeah, for sure. It is a crazy busy week, and that's already happened once. Timberwolves Spurs are set. Game four, Timberwolves Spurs, Target Center on Sunday night. That moves the Lynx back to Saturday night for their home opener against Atlanta at Target Center. So who knows? Tentative. We're making plans. We have tickets whenever the game is, if it stays Thursday night or if they have to move it due to NHL scheduling. Well, here we go. Tuesday night, Heather, always great. By the way, where do people find your work?
Yeah, it's Written Rule of Sports. That's Substack.com. I'm working on a story now. I'm going to be posting after today's game, after the win. So, yeah, Written Rule of Sports. Substack.com. Thanks.
Always great, Heather. Have a good evening.
Yep. Yeah. Thanks, Steve. Good to talk to you.
Heather Rule joining us. Quick break. We'll come back. We have the weather. Timberwolves, they open against San Antonio Monday night. Game one of the NBA Western Conference semifinals. Once again, Chris Hine of the Star Tribune moments away here on News Talk 830-WCCO.
It's Sophia with an F, Franklin with a Y, and if you're looking for some bubblegum dum-dum podcast, then you are in the wrong place, baby. Whether I'm reminiscing on the trials and tribulations of working in the corporate world to recapping today's latest reality TV show, you're going to want to pull up a chair and stick around. It's a good time and always 100% unfiltered. Follow and listen to Sophia with an F wherever you get your podcasts.
Timberwolves, Thursday night, take care of business, beat the Denver Nuggets at Target Center. What a night it was in sports. Wild eliminate the Stars in advance to take on the Colorado Avalanche. Timberwolves eliminate the Denver Nuggets, a 10th series, some back and forth. And now they advance and take on the San Antonio Spurs beginning Monday night in San Antonio. Chris Hine covers the Timberwolves for the Star Tribune. Chris, always good to visit with you. Shorthanded, what a performance late Thursday night at Target Center.
Yeah, I think game four, game six of that series, really unlike anything I covered in 8 years on the beat. I think the energy in the building, the way the team played, and everything just from the rivalry with Denver, all of it just kind of feeding into those nights, overcoming the injuries and the long odds that they did have. Honestly, it really was like two wins unlike anything I've covered in 8 years. Kind of when you compare the circumstances and the venue and just what they were up against in those games.
It is extraordinary and a historic win because no team that didn't have three players averaging double figures has won a playoff game. And I think I have that right.
Yeah, I saw that stat as well. Yeah, that's a crazy stat. I think it goes to show you, number one, the depth of talent on this Wolves team, that somebody like TJ Shannon can come off the bench after not really playing much in this series and be their second leading scorer. It shows the adaptability of some of the guys on the roster, like Jaden McDaniels, who, when Anthony Edwards is healthy, Jaden McDaniels is more of a complementary offensive player than he is a ball dominant guy. But in game six, he had the ball in his hands a lot. He answered the call, especially down the stretch with some big, big buckets. And on top of that, he's playing 45 minutes and he's guarding Jamal Murray at the other end and holding him to 4-for-17. You know, it's one of the best two-way performances you're going to see from anybody on that kind of a stage. It's just remarkable what Jaden McDaniels was able to pull off. And what? That's it. You know, you hear in sports all the time about this next man up mentality, right? Yeah. And I think the Wolves embodied that better than a lot of teams can.
Well, and they had that IO game earlier in the series where Ant goes down with the injury and he steps up and kind of put the club on his back.
100%. And that's what was so crushing, at least going into Game 6, was that IO, with this kind of lingering calf soreness that he's had, wasn't able to give it a go because you saw what he was capable of if given the keys a little bit more. And 43 points in Game 4, and then you don't have that going into Game 6. And, man, I think, you know, at the end of the day, this team in the Rudy Gobert sort of era here the last few years has always been a defense-first team. And in that Game 6, they still had their two best defensive players on the floor in Gobert and McDaniels. And they were able to limit Jokic and Murray. And that gave them a chance, right? And I think when you look at the Spurs series, we don't know who's going to be available. Dosunmu is day-to-day, Chris Finch said. Ant is still week-to-week as he tries to make it back. But if you're going to have a chance to win one of these games early and maybe buy some time for Edwards to get back, it's going to be a rock fight defensive struggle. And it's going to be a low-scoring game. You know, maybe doesn't reach 100 points or something like that. And that's what this team's identity ultimately is and has been. They're a defense-first team. And they leaned into that to get by Denver. They're going to have to lean into it to get by San Antonio.
Yeah, they're not getting any respect. You look at the national media for what that's worth and all the people just saying, you know, Spurs and four, so on and so forth. But you look at the players available for the Timberwolves. Once again, Dante DiVincenzo done, the Achilles injury. Anthony Edwards, as you pointed out, week to week. Io, who knows when he'll be able to return to the lineup. But they still have established guys, NBA players, very good players. You talked about what McDaniel's been able to bring to it. But the much maligned Rudy Gobert in that clinching game, you got 10 points, 13 rebounds, 8 assists for Rudy for the big guy. He was huge in that series.
Absolutely. Yeah, probably the best playoff series of Rudy Gobert's career, the way that he really limited and shut down Jokic in key situations at various points in that series. Offensively, honestly, go back and look at some of the plays he made late in Game 6 on offense in the fourth quarter. He caught the ball a couple times kind of off the pick and roll, off the short roll. He found Naz Reid in the corner for a three. And he found T.J. Shannon with about 5 minutes left to beat the shot clock, a shot that put the Wolves up 8 and I think was a key possession in that game to give the Wolves some breathing room with about 5 minutes to go. And, you know, he's worked really hard at that end of the floor to not be as much of a liability or a drag on the offense. And defensively, he really showed up against a guy who's had his number of late in recent seasons when it comes to the one-on-one matchup. But, you know, I think Rudy shut a lot of people up in that series that were waiting to criticize him, and his performance was undeniable.
I'm going into the series with the Spurs. There's the obvious. What do you think are some of the X factors going into Game 1 on Monday night?
Yeah, so, you know, obviously you got to see where the Wolves are health-wise. Is Io DeSumo able to give it a go, or is he going to be out again? I would expect him at some point in the series, but it's hard to know for Game 1 based on his availability today. Number two, you know, one of the things that people have been talking about with the Spurs all season is their shooting. They're a middle-of-the-pack three-point shooting team. They have a lot of young guys who haven't been in the playoffs before. This is their first taste of the postseason. So is San Antonio's shooting going to be there when it matters most? Can the Wolves scheme and game plan a defense, you know, around San Antonio's weaknesses on the offensive end of the floor? I was looking up some numbers, and San Antonio took the most corner threes this season of any team in the NBA. So the Wolves, to prevent those, you kind of got to man up and play one-on-one defense. Because if the ball, if you start doubling people, if De'Aaron Fox is able to drive, or Wemby becomes enough of a problem that they have to double team him, then the ball gets in a rotation, swinging it around, guys get scrambled up, and all of a sudden they're going to be getting these corner three looks. They were much worse if the 3-point attempts came from above the break, 34%. So it's all about, you know, again, I think it's going to be manning up, kind of guard your yard mentality on the defensive end of the floor and not let the Spurs generate these corner threes that they were so used to getting during the regular season.
And a final thought, once again, Chris Hine joining us, covers the Timberwolves for the Star Tribune, online at startribune.com. And that is Chris Finch. He's certainly a lightning rod for a certain segment of Timberwolves fandom on social media, to say the very least. I thought Chris Finch managed all of this beautifully in round one.
You know, it's not crazy, but I think it's just a part of NBA fandom in general. I venture, if you were to poll the social media crowd of 25 of the 30 NBA teams, they probably all hate their coach, right? I think that just kind of goes with the territory of social media fandom in the NBA. There's probably very few fan bases that are like, yes, we like our coach. So I think it kind of comes with the territory. And at the end of the day, the results ultimately speak for themselves. It was a rough regular season for all involved. You certainly understand fans' frustrations with everything that was going on this season. It felt like the team underachieved in the regular season. But, you know, one thing that I've always said or tried to write or preach to fans online is, look, these guys have been here before. They've been to the postseason. Chris Finch has now been in the postseason a number of years with this team. They kind of figure it out when they get to this time of year. And I don't think that that is a quality that you can overlook in a coaching staff and in a head coach, that when they're able to really drill down on a specific opponent, they get that, they get some days of preparation to come up with a game plan, to drill it into the players. Like, you know, they're among the best in the business at that. And that you can't take away from them. 5 playoff series wins in 3 years. If Wolves fans, if fans aren't happy about that, there's plenty of teams out there that I feel like would scoop up Chris Finch in a heartbeat with that, yeah, with that on his resume. So,
and fun,
you know, the grass isn't always greener, is what I'll say.
Yeah, for sure. I think you did a whale of a job. By the way, congrats to your dad. I saw that social media post on his retirement.
Yes. My father, Chet, he's a high school math teacher back home where I grew up, in near Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. 55 years teaching math. He was 33 years a high school boys hoops coach back there as well. He's hanging him up once and for all after this year, and I just wanted to give him a little shout out on my social media. It was nice to see some of the messages pour in for him. So appreciate you mentioning that.
Yeah, very cool. Congrats to him. Chris, look forward to your coverage of round two against the Spurs.
Absolutely. Thank you, Steve, as always. Appreciate it.
There he is. Chris Hine covers the Timberwolves for the Star Tribune on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. We'll go outdoors with our buddy Steve Carney in a moment. We're going to jump right into it. SteveCarneyOutdoors.com. Steve, it's been a while. How you been?
Been great. Been a couple of weeks, but yeah, we're back at it, Steve. It's, you know, for the first time, I think in about 4 months, I see really good weather for about 10 days. When's the last time I said that?
It's been
Never.
A while. It's been a while, and leading up to the opener, stable is good.
Yeah, we look, you know, it looks like 60s, 70s for like 10 days in a row, and that's really good. We really need it. I think it's going to be a good opener because of that. The weather's going to be stable for 8-10 days, which it really hasn't. So I think leading up to it, I'm very optimistic. But our lake levels, as we talked about, are really low. I did a lot of searching today, checking out some of my spots, and boy, it's going to be tough getting that pontoon boat in. But, you know, make sure you got a backup lake, you know, for the opener, just in case you can't get in. A lot of these accesses are really in big trouble. I don't know if the DNR can get to this in a week, but we'll see. And also, none of the docks are out yet, so we're just kind of, you know, waiting.
Yeah, and by the way, opener coming up, stable weather, certainly good, but we do need rain. I mean, we just didn't have the snowpack. We went into the winter dry. So that is a huge factor going forward. As we get through May and get into June, we need the rain. There are a lot of spots in this state that are dry. For example, I've lived along Mississippi most of my life, and we're talking current that you normally see in July here in early right. May. Very unusual. The water's just not moving.
Well, you know, a little tip for people on the opener, make sure you got hip boots or waders, because you're going to need them to get into some of these accesses, because you're going to have to back in, you know, quite far. It's unfortunate. We just need, you know, as much rain as we can get, but it doesn't look like it's going to rain for like 2 weeks. So up in North Country, be prepared, you know, be prepared to maybe moving to a different lake, you know, if you're not able to use that access. So something to think about.
Yeah, for sure. And I would assume with the opener, shallow is going to be the thing. We already talked about lake levels, but shallow.
Yep, I'm going to be in Pope County, kind of in the central part of Minnesota. I'm going to be working some of those really small farm lakes, 300-400 acres. And, you know, water temperature should be 8 to 10 degrees warmer. So I'm going south, and I think a lot of people should do that just because everything's kind of late so far.
Yeah, and at some point here in May, you're going to hit the border waters again?
No, I'm not. I'm done with that. It really wasn't very good, and I think, you know, a lot of things going on in the border waters. I'm just kind of staying away from it now and, you know, concentrating in, you know, North Country and, you know, getting things going. But, yeah, it just, you know, it was kind of off, I guess is the best way to say.
All right, Steve, look forward to an update on the opener next week here on the program. Normal time out of the news at 4. We'll visit then.
All right, sounds great, Steve. Take care.
There he is, Steve Kearney. Steve Kearney Outdoors. Weekends for years here in CCO. We had last Saturday off due to a Twins matinee, but we will be back next week with an update on the opener with our good buddy Steve Kearney. Don't forget, tomorrow Corzo starts her sports coverage at 10. An abbreviated show is done at 10:30 inside Twins, and then we'll have the Twins and the Blue Jays. 11:45 first pitch here on the home of the Twins. News Talk 830 WCCO. They got beat 11-4 earlier today. Bullpen gives up 8 in the 8th. Not a good look. Big thanks to Lindsey Brown. Big thanks to you for tuning in. We may see a little rain tonight, some light rain tonight, but a sunny 68 tomorrow should be a beauty. The news next.
Football is fun. Why shouldn't your football podcast be the same?
Follow and listen to Heed the Call NFL podcast with Dan Hansis and Mark Sessler wherever you get your podcasts.